Birth, Volume 3, The Gathering, Chapter 33. "Sir, we have some battle reports from Cleveland and Detroit," said Bainbury as they stood together across the underground street from the buffet lines at Dick and Katie's reception. "Stand close together and face me while I face the people behind you. Now give me the reports," said Riker. "Best we can tell, both cities are gone," said Bainbury flatly. "What does that mean, gone?" asked Riker. "My guys choppered over the area for an hour." "Nothing but dirt," said Bainbury. "How much time do we have?" asked Riker. "It's impossible to say. They've been sitting up there for hours after they relocated," said Donetti. "I have known when I was going to die a few times. I didn't like it a damn bit," said General Bainbury in his gruff voice as he attempted to speak just loud enough to overcome the noise of the crowd. "I see it didn't work out the way you expected, General," said Riker. "You start thinking you're invincible when you open your eyes, and then you get dead," said Bainbury. "At least you had an enemy you could shoot at, General," said Donetti. "Well, maybe we can throw sand in their eyes," said Riker. "Yeah, I hear it's kind of hard to fly a 747 in a shitstorm," said Bainbury. "I doubt we're safe down here," said Riker. "You said it didn't matter," said Bainbury. "I said it, and I meant it. Nobody lives forever. Besides, if Kyle is right, the commander of this assault won't have an easy day of it either. It's how you live that matters," said Riker. "Your guru lady tell you that?" asked Bainbury. "Stow it, Bainbury," spat Donetti. "What are you going to do? Run out there with your 45 and try to shoot them down?" "No, I'm under orders to be loving while I'm being vaporized, remember?" asked Bainbury. "Okay, focus for a second. Do we have anything cooking out there in the ionosphere?" asked Riker. "Yes, Mr. President. There are two facilities that fired up over an hour ago. Your live broadcast went out. But we had to juice the whole thing," said Donetti. "Juice? What does that mean?" asked Riker. "In order to get the ionosphere shaped right to hit the Midwest of the Old World with our broadcast, they both had to fire focused beams to reshape the upper atmosphere. It's extremely risky," said Donetti. "That's the whole solar tap thing, right?" asked Riker. "Yes, sir. And so far it seems to be stable on our end," said Donetti. "What's it doing on their end?" asked Bainbury. "There's no way for us to know. The Mojave crew said they are getting a reflection off the atmosphere of the Old World back to ours, somewhere over the Black Sea," said Donetti. "It was more of an annoyance than anything else. But if some of that good feeling gets through to someone, maybe it will gain us some recruits," said Riker. "You liberals are always about the feelings," said Bainbury. "Liberals only focus on one thing. What can I say to stay in this elected position so I can make more money? The perks are just too good to pass up. Remember, the one-party system was what screwed up the world in the first place. The liberals are the party of the rich," said Riker. "Is that what all the crying was about after the election?" asked Bainbury. "That's the way it works. Promise, promise, promise. And then laugh at the people after you get elected, until they give you that look like, 'You promised,'" said Riker mockingly. "And that's liberals?" asked Bainbury. "I'm afraid he's right. Textbook stuff, General," said Donetti. "So, conservatives are all about self-reliance, right?" asked Bainbury. "Not necessarily. They literally believe that central governments are bad and should be kept to the absolute minimum list of duties outlined in the Constitution. Seen and not heard, except in times of war," said Riker. "Well, looks like you have that part down pretty well," said Bainbury, unfolding his arms and readjusting his hat. "Besides, it's a little hard to provide for the common defense when your enemy has you on the anvil and he has the hammer." "He can't hit anything when he can't see," said Donetti. "Good point, Admiral. How soon can we be alerted when the carriers out there deploy their attack vessels? Asked Riker. Actually, we have 3 scopes on them now, which includes a set of radio telescope arrays. If they make a move, I'll let you know, said Donetti. I'm afraid I am with General Bainberry on this one. I really want to know where they intend to strike, though. Can you do that? Asked Riker. Yes, Mr. President, I can do that, said Donetti, saluting the President. I won't be in the bunker tonight, Admiral, said Riker, returning the salute, and walking toward the buffet line where the crowd was assembled. Hadid was close behind him and easily matched his long stride. He was calm and breathed evenly and let his hands swing free without holding them up near his chest. Are you okay? I mean, you're not saying anything about me being out and about, said Riker to Hadid as they walked. It's unusual, I know, but I have a strong and peaceful feeling about things, said Hadid. That's an oxymoron, Hadid, said Riker. The garden is blooming, said Hadid. In case you haven't noticed, we've been living in a cave for the last few months. There's no garden down here, said Riker. It is in the writing, Mr. President. The gods in the garden, said Hadid. Keep talking like I've been down there in the library reading all those ancient books. I haven't. Call me pragmatic, but I tend to see things as they are, you know, said Riker. Then again, it is all about the seeing, is it not? Replied Hadid. What about the seeing? Asked Lorraine as the 2 men nearly walked over her. Oh, I am sorry. We were just, I didn't see you there. Hadid was saying something about a garden, said Riker, fumbling for some words. It's okay. I angled into you anyway. I'm just glad to see you out on the street with us. I really am glad, she said, smiling so broadly that her blue-green eyes disappeared. Me too. Is there some cake left? Riker asked. I think there's some. Let me get you a piece and some coffee. Come on, said Lorraine. Hadid placed his hands together behind his back and walked silently just behind the president, always looking ahead. The entire complex of people was here on the street, talking and laughing. They were in small groups, like bees, huddled in no particular way, just to be near one another. Just black is fine, thank you. It feels good to be up here, even though we're still in a cave, said Riker, sipping the coffee. He handed Lorraine the cup and sliced a small piece of cake with a stainless steel fork from the mess hall. It was freshly baked white cake with Chef Bailey's homemade icing smoothed perfectly over the top and sides. He placed his fork back on the plate and reached for the cup. You said something about a garden? Asked Lorraine, retrieving the cup again. Hadid, he said something about a garden blooming, said Riker, taking another bite of cake. Eden, the Garden of Eden. I think that's what he means, said Lorraine, handing him the cup. Not that I've been thinking about it a whole lot, but just what are we going to do without a sun on this journey through the center of the galaxy? Asked Riker. I'm not sure, said Lorraine. That's it? You're not sure? You're supposed to know everything about the Earth, and you have a mind for organizing things that I have learned to treasure. And you haven't given any thought to what the Earth is going to look like outside the solar system? Asked Riker. Noah's ship wasn't a frozen ball, said Lorraine. You mean the Earth? Said Riker. Finish your cake and take this coffee. I need both hands, said Lorraine, smiling again. President Riker finished his cake and handed the dish to Hadid. He caught the eye of a young man with a chef's hat and handed it off to him. Riker took another sip of coffee and placed himself directly in front of Lorraine. When the Nephilim were chased off Noah's world, it was transported through space where it merged with the world we just left. The process took 7 of his months, which really don't know how long that was in solar time. It never froze. It stormed like crazy, and it was dark and dreary, but it never froze. It is quite possible that outside the heliosheath there is enough plasma and infrared energy to keep a world warm. Besides, the book says the planet won't be flooded again, said Lorraine. It does say something about fire, though, right? Asked Riker. That part is done. Remember, the wicked burn his stubble? Asked Lorraine. I don't know about that. Those ships are up there right now, said Riker. Well, one thing is for sure, Bob. Time is on our side, said Lorraine, touching his arm. I hope so, said Riker. You haven't spoken to the bride and groom yet. Come on, said Lorraine. The three of them walked over to the tightest group near the front of the buffet line. The sound of voices and laughter was loud, and at least half female as they approached. Hey, Mr. President, say hello to Mrs. Daring, said Dick. Hello, Mrs. Daring, and hello, Kyle and Donna, said Riker as he shook all their hands. Katie and I want to say, you look absolutely amazing, said Lorraine. Yes, I agree. I had no idea anything like that existed down here, said Riker. I know. I keep looking around for a giant pumpkin and some white mice, said Katie, smiling under her thick blonde hair. Dick, you are positively smashing, said Lorraine, hugging him and kissing him on the cheek. Worsted wool. My first, for sure, said Dick, running his fingers under the pressed lapels. Have you thrown your bouquet yet? Asked Lorraine. I didn't get one. No florist at Side R, said Katie. Well, let's see. This dried flower arrangement will work. Hey, Kyle, would you hand me one of those linen napkins? Thank you, said Lorraine, pulling the basket away from the flowers and wrapping the linen napkin around them tightly. This will do nicely. Donna, would you grab that microphone off that stand right there and make an announcement, and then stand over there and get ready to catch, said Lorraine. Donna grabbed the mic as Lorraine handed the bouquet to Katie. Hey, y'all, this bride is about to toss the bouquet. So if I could get all the bachelorettes over in this area, that would be great, said Donna with her lovely southern accent. The people began to shuffle, and within a few minutes there were about 30 women standing tightly against the curb of the street. Katie made her way to the sidewalk on the edge of the curb with Dick carrying the back of her dress. She waved and smiled at everyone and turned around and tossed the dried flower arrangement high in the air behind her. There was a rush of laughter and short shrieks of joy and suddenly clapping as the young girl from the laundry wrapped both hands around the flowers. Mr. President, came Donetti's unmistakable voice behind him. It's time. They're moving. Jesus Christ. Let's go. Hadid, Situation Room. Get him up, said Riker, moving quickly beside Donetti as they made their way to Building E. He looked ahead past the crowd and could see Smith and Jones heading through the glass doors of the lobby and heading for the elevator. Bainbury came alongside as they quickened their pace. They were through the doors before he realized, but the elevator had already gone up. It seemed like a long wait, although the elevator in this particular building was designed to run fast. As soon as the doors opened, they were pushing the button for the fifth floor. Within seconds, the door opened and the team ran across the lobby to the radio room and maglocked the door. Tell me something, said Riker. Mr. President, our scopes noticed a heat signature coming from the three carrier ships about 20 minutes ago. It looked like they were getting ready to do something. About 5 minutes ago, the large doors opened and the ships began coming out. They're still coming out, sir, said the chief master sergeant at the comm screen. How many are there? Said Riker. We make it about 400 ships right now, and they're still filing out, said the chief. What's your analysis, chief? Asked Donetti. The way they're forming up, as slow and careful as they're positioning, I'd say they're preparing to attack at least 4 main targets, and they are packed to the roof, Admiral, said the chief. They're really doing this, said Riker distantly. Chief, Has there been any contact from Roland up in Alaska? Asked the Nettie. Yes, sir. I spoke to him 10 minutes ago. He said they're pushing everything they have at the sky. The Oray is as hot as it will go, said the chief. I have troops out there, Mr. President, said Bainbury. Give them a channel, chief, said Riker, folding his arms. They'll hear us, for sure, Mr. President, said the chief. Do it, said Riker quietly. The tech sergeant typed in a series of codes into the control keyboard and handed the mic to General Bainbury. Attention, all ground positions. This is General Bainbury. They're coming, boys. Keep your heads down and take cover. We expect they will make two passes, so don't get caught being a first responder. When it's over, help as many people as you can. Above all else, don't be afraid. We're Marines. Semper Fi. And he let go of the key and took a deep breath through his nose and exhaled slowly, whispering the sound. Hoorah!